Hello and welcome to show 21 of the MisesUK.org podcast with me, Andy Duncan, here in the glorious Henley-on-Thames, as sponsored by finlinger.com. After a three-week sojourn around the world to Hong Kong and Vienna by way of Abu Dhabi, Keir Martland lowered me once again into the interviewer's chair, and this week I'm speaking to Tho Bishop, who's the social media and press editor at Mises.org in Auburn, Alabama. We'll mostly be speaking about the recent missile attack on Syria as carried out by the US, the UK and the French governments. This was following an alleged chemical attack on Douma in Syria, which was supposedly carried out by President Assad on his own population. Good afternoon, Tho.
Thank you for having me, Andy.
It's my pleasure. Now, we've had a fantastic shirts-off day here in England with some lovely warm sunshine and blue skies. It's still just morning for you down there in Auburn. How's your weather shaping up today?
Well, it's been a little bipolar the last few days. In the morning, it will be very cold. Then, of course, you know, by the time it gets to be about lunchtime, it's quite hot. But I'll take this over the very humid heat that we are soon going to have in the summer. So I'm going to enjoy it while I can.
Yes, I said this to Jeff Dice. I made the mistake of going to Auburn in July once and never again.
Well, that's the only problem we have with Mises University. It's a great program, but we have to do it in July. And the students that come here don't get to experience the best Auburn weather. But luckily, we still have a good time.
Well, you have amazing air conditioning in that building.
Yes.
That's the main thing. Okay, so let's get down to business. With extraordinary speed last week, we saw a video on YouTube 1 minute of an alleged chemical attack in Syria. And then almost within hours, there was planes flying in and throwing missiles at Syria from Britain, France and the US. It could have marked the beginning of World War III with Russia being heavily involved in Syria. What do you think of this murky business?
Well, that's fascinating. Not only is this an escalation of what we've seen, but it was a complete reversal from what President Trump had been saying for the last few weeks now, which of course leads many to believe that, hey, interests that on the ground there in Syria that want the U.S. to stay involved, that want to see us attacking the government, obviously had, may have had some interest in sparking this sort of action. Seeing where things go next, though, I think is going to be truly fascinating. You mentioned that the speed of which this all came about, it's really looking at foreign policy by social media, right? Clips get on YouTube, Trump turns to Twitter, and all of a sudden we have missiles heading to Damascus. It's really a fascinating age. But what's just as interesting is to see what comes next, because to a certain point, to Trump's credit, he has been using his Twitter bully pulpit to almost bend over backwards, trying to disconnect us from Russia as much as possible, which has been very interesting to see. Uh-huh. And now he's talking about trying to bring in more Arab countries into the area to possibly allow the U.S. to get out some, which, of course, there leads to the possibly very dangerous combination of having Saudi troops in a conflict with Iran being there in Syria. And so that seems to me as a very dangerous escalation of things. But how that all plays out, we'll be seeing the next few months.
Crikey, you've opened a few cans of worms there. If we get back to Donald Trump then, with his Trump bully pulpit tweet Twitter feed, a few years ago Obama was engaging in similar behavior in Syria. And Donald Trump on his real Donald Trump Twitter feed was saying things like, we need congressional approval and Obama should get out of Syria now. It's nothing to do with the US. Now that President Trump's in office, he's behaving in exactly the same neocon way. What's changed for Trump in the last 3 years, do you think?
I'm not sure what is more disappointing, President Trump's differences from candidate Trump on foreign policy or the Fed, because it's been, complete reversals there. It's not surprising to see someone, take the president's office and then change course entirely on foreign policy from what they promised. Obviously, we saw that with W. Bush, who campaigned against the nation building back in 2000. We saw this with Obama, who was the candidate of hope and change and peace and, unicorns.
Yep.
And then unleashed his drone army on the world. So it's not utterly surprising there, nor is the complete hypocrisy of the U.S. Congress itself. Mm-hmm. What's interesting here is that, if Donald Trump had gone to Congress, he would have gotten approval because, even though, for example, Republicans, Justin Amash made a great tweet last week in really showing how stark this was. Republicans under Obama signed a letter saying, oh, well, if you're going to launch missile strikes, you must come to us first. And of course, and then, of course, this past week, it was Democrats leading that same letter. You know, very little overlap between the Republicans and the Democrats that signed the two there. So again, it's a hypocrisy that we see throughout D.C. And, you know, really, this is the state of foreign policy in the U.S. for decades now, where Congress has completely given up its constitutional role in declaring war, which I think has a direct connection to the growth of the executive branch and the U.S. warfare state in the last few decades.
Yeah, I always like to think of the U.S. being very similar to the Roman Empire. So we have the president is the emperor, and we used to have the Senate. That was very, very powerful. And even in Augustus's time, the first emperor, the Senate was still very powerful. But eventually the Senate just became a location for placemen, and it was just literally a rubber stamp for everything. And that seems to be where the U.S. now. Now, getting back to the actual alleged chemical attack, in the last couple of days, we've had Robert Fisk, the infamous reporter, and he's made his way to Douma, where this video was made, and he's been speaking to people who work in that clinic, and they say the video is genuine, but the victims were suffering from suffocation rather than chemicals. Now, apparently, one of these famous white helmet people put his head round the door and said gas, so people started hosing everybody down just in case. And there's been some links between the white helmet and Al-Qaeda and the US government. Why does anyone believe anything our governments currently tell us about anything?
That's a very good question, because you don't have to go as far back to you know, WMDs and the Iraq War. I mean, we've seen time and time again early reports blaming Assad for chemical weapons. You know, as time has gone on, people have reversed course. I mean, even the UN has admitted this. You know, 2013, there was an attack that, you know, a commission sent there later concluded that while they can't, you know, definitively prove that it was rebels that launched it, there was strong indicators that would suggest that. And so this isn't some you know, crazy Russian Twitter bot conspiracy that you only see on RT. I mean, this was the UN suggesting that.
Yeah.
But the, you know, Fink's report was absolutely fascinating because, you know, he was the first Western journalist to actually be able to go there on the scene. And, you know, even General Mattis would, you know, has said that, you know, the ability for the U.S. government to collect, you know, on the ground data is very limited. And in fact, you know, some of the reports that came out after the fact actually portrayed General Mattis as being one of the dovish voices in the room and trying to decide how to respond. And somehow it was French intelligence, which is always dangerous when those two words are combined. But it was French intelligence that convinced them that Assad was behind it. But we'll see how that ages over time. Again, the interests there are very stark. I mean, you know, it's been promising to see people like in the U.S. government, like, you know, Senator Rand Paul and Thomas Massie from Kentucky, not only say that these strikes are not in our interests, but to openly question the narrative that Assad was behind them at all. Because I think that really shoots to, you know, the true issue that we have to get Americans in particular to think of, is that, you know, why in the world would you keep listening to these people that have consistently lied us into war, that have you know, cost us trillions of dollars, thousands of lives, millions of casualties outside of America. You know, having people start actually asking those questions in corridors of influence is promising, but obviously not enough to stop, you know, what Donald Trump is going to do next, whatever that may be.
Yeah, there's no discernible benefits to the U.S. militarily to attack Syria or to the U.K. or even to Syria. In fact, it's the other way around, because with millions of migrants pouring from Iraq and Syria and all these other destroyed countries into Europe, that makes the U.K. and Europe's security worse every time they fire these missiles in to drive more people out of that area into Europe where they can all get welfare checks and so on. Now, we've seen this undue haste, this rush to attack without any evidence or any investigation. And we also hear stories of pipelines from Qatar that the U.S. corporate interests want to put through Syria, and also the corporate interests want to stop a pipeline from Iran going through Syria, which is being sponsored by the Russians. Now, getting back to Assad, and why would he do something as stupid as be on the verge of victory and then do this? I like, again, the ancient Roman phrase, qui bono. Who is benefiting from this situation? Who do you think is benefiting from this attack on Syria?
Well, obviously, no one benefits more than the enemies of Assad themselves. Again, this is not, you know, I question the narrative. I don't think it makes sense for Assad to do it. I don't think he's the nicest guy in the world. You know, if you know, I nor do I think that any really major state leader tends to be so. If he, you know, I don't think his morals necessarily would stop him from attacking his own people. But again, the strategic interests here make no sense at all. You know, going back to the White Hats, you know, obviously it's a group of Syrians who operate only in areas of the country that are not controlled by the government. You know, I think a lot of the people, you know, involved with them are well-intentioned people, but obviously they have made a decision there that whoever opposes Assad is the lesser of two evils. And of course, we know that many of those people are very dangerous. You know, they are either explicitly, you know, Al-Qaeda or Al-Qaeda's allies. They want to impose Sharia law on the country. You know, they are not groups that have, you know, America leaders, you have American foreign policy hawks like Marco Rubio and John McCain love to portray this narrative of these moderate rebels who are going to, you know, liberate Syria and bring a Western values to the country. Well, no, I mean, for one, Assad is, you know, relative to the region, you know, is definitely, you know, isn't as bad as many. And the people that take up guns and bombs and are fighting those wars are the ones that have been inspired by, you know, the last, you know, 15 years of radical Islamic militarism in the region. So whenever you see people allying with the true armies opposed to Assad, you know, they are making that agreement with people who don't have the same interests of America by their own definition. So again, obviously the enemies of Assad are the ones that benefit the most. The fact that various weapons manufacturers in the United States that have a tremendous amount of clout in D.C. are able to make some money off of it certainly doesn't hurt. And so, again, how this all plays out will be very interesting.
Yeah, just in terms of the missiles, I think each missile was like $2 million each, and there was 103 missiles. That's nearly $250 million just there. Yeah. And speaking of these 103 missiles, on Ron Paul's Liberty Report a couple of days ago, there's a British lady who's in Damascus called Vanessa Beely, and she claimed that 70 of these missiles were shot down by the Syrians without Russian involvement, using probably old Russian equipment. Now, President Trump tweeted mission accomplished, the famous George W. Bush phrase. But even on their own terms, these three countries going in and launching this 103 missiles, isn't 70 of them being downed a complete military failure?
I think it is. You know, it definitely has the ability to be seen as that. So the question would be, you know, does this embolden Assad and Putin to perhaps act more aggressively in the future? Of course, a Trump defender would suggest that, oh, well, you know, Trump was trying to have bigger bark than bite intentionally to try to avoid further escalation. You know, take that for what it's worth. Between this and really the last 15 years of the inability of the United States to rid the world of the Taliban, you know, to fully control the conflicts they've gotten into. You know, for all of the trillions that are being spent, that have been spent in the last few years on these incredible weapons programs, you know, we are still fighting the same battles that, you know, any mission accomplish messages, be that in banner form or tweet, look rather silly, I think, to any objective observer. So, you know, the long-term consequences of that, again, it's, see how that all plays out.
Yeah, let's get on to the long-term consequences then, because there's a great article on the Mises Wire by Ron Paul, which our listeners might want to get hold of, talking about this being a military failure. Now, he asks a lot of great questions in the article. Why the haste? The craziest one, of course, why bomb a chemical munitions factory? I mean, that's a pretty dangerous thing to do, isn't it? Bomb a chemical munitions factory. Where was Congress? Why has Trump changed so much? Why are the UK and the US acting as ISIS's air force? How does any of this make any of us safer? Was it all illegal? But wrapping that all up into a kind of final question on this, you've talked about the future a lot and so on. Where do you think we are now after this military action?
Well, and one thing about the bombing the chemical weapons factory is that there was other reports by journalists on the ground suggesting that, you know, that's not even what they hit at all, that, you know, some of the factories are creating anti-venom and whatnot. Again, you know, people have their own interests there, but even that is up for debate. As far as where things go now, I think that the real player here is Saudi Arabia with the new crown prince, and especially with John Bolton now serving as national security advisor. Trump has made America has obviously had a very strong working relationship with the Saudis going back, a very long time. But I think that obviously Trump has always had very grand visions of what he can do in the Middle East. You know, he's been saying that his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, is going to bring peace to the Middle East. And you have a very interesting figure with Mohammed bin Salman as the new crown prince. He's all of these very grand aspirations of, where he's going to reform Islam. He's going to pivot the country away from oil. He wants to help bring some Western values to the country. And of course, the major dynamic there is Saudi Arabia versus Iran. You see this playing out in proxy wars in Yemen. You see this playing out in Syria. And so if you see a greater role of, Arab nations kind of being more of the troop, boots on the ground for U.S. interests, it's all going to be around that, religious conflict there between the two visions of Iran and Syria. So I think that the fears of attacks on Iran within the next few years are very real. Obviously, John Bolton has been campaigning on that for well over a decade now. If Trump sees a willing partner and ally in Saudi Arabia for that, obviously Israel has been wanting to do this for a long time. I think Syria is only the stepping stone for increased action within Iran. And obviously there you still have the Russian connections. You still have, that's, I think, where this entire world conflict is moving to. And I think that is really going to be where things get very scary.
Yes, it really is a crowded little chessboard there, isn't it, in Syria? Yes. I wish the Crown Prince all the best of luck coming up against the Wahhabis and so on, who've supported the Saud family for so many decades. So I suppose we'll see how that goes. Now, I think we've covered everything in a good time. Before we go, are there any events or any social media things going on at Mises.org that you'd like to tell us about?
Oh, well, it's going to be a very busy year, and already has been for the Institute. We have an event coming up in San Francisco next month. We're going to Dallas. We're doing Bringing Back the Libertarian Scholars Conference in New York in September. So we've got a lot of exciting events going on. With those will come new videos. With some great speakers. I'm very excited to see Patrick Byrne and Caitlin Long talk about blockchain and cryptocurrency at our San Francisco event. We're very excited to have a Brit, George Pickering, returning to the Mises Fellowship Program, which is always one of the highlights of the calendar here. So, the Mises Institute is staying very active with all sorts of great scholar programs, and just keep an eye out for the great video and products and articles that we'll still be cranking out.
Fantastic. All sounds brilliant. So, thank you for your time this morning, Tho Bishop.
Thank you, Andy. This has been great.
We hope you enjoyed tonight's program with Tho Bishop. If you'd like to help us out on the MisesUK.org podcast, please add the links to our programs onto your favorite social media sites. And also, if you can, pretty please, please write us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. For every review that's written, 100 angels will greet you at heaven's pearly gates. In the meantime, we'll be back very soon with some other great guests from the world of Austrian economics, or even other interesting areas related to the arena of liberty. In the meantime, please enjoy your property and freedom responsibly.